This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Morning Run, and you're here with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So the finance minister, Tengku Dato' Sri Zafrul Aziz, caused a bit of a stir when he recently commented that nearly half of millennials spend beyond their means, according to data from Bank Negara. Specifically, 47% of youths are running up high credit card debts. So the finance minister encouraged youths to prioritise their spending and set aside savings for their retirement.
Yeah, just for context here, Tengku Zafrul was making these comments at a financial literacy event called Kembara Wang Bijak 2020, which was organized by the Credit Counseling and Debt Management Agency, more commonly known as AKPK, alongside HSBC Malaysia and University Science Malaysia. So in that context, his remarks are essentially common sense advice on financial management, right? Spend less than you earn. However, coming from the finance minister, this advice seems to have hit a sore spot, and as evidenced over on social media.
Yeah, I think I was just going to add that I think he meant well, right, in this forum. It was not like he was just giving you some random advice.
Yeah, and this is advice that I hear on the show, ringing in a sense quite a bit from licensed financial planners themselves.
Yes, it is. But the problem is that it also does gloss over some of these structural reasons why the youth of today are struggling to survive compared with generations previous. So to discuss the reasons behind this generational wage gap, we're speaking this morning to Siti Aisyah Tumin, Research Associate at the Khazanah Research Institute. Good morning, Siti. So could you tell us, what are some of the reasons that explain why savings by millennials may be lower than previous generations?
Good morning, guys. So I actually looked where the Credit Counseling and Debt Management Agency has actually done research on this. And actually in 2018, they did have a survey that asked people why they did not save. And among the top reasons are actually high living costs and people not having surplus income. And you see that, you know, not knowing how to save or overspending is actually ranked low on why people are not saving. So I think this goes back to the question of what determines savings to begin with. It is your income as well as your consumption pattern or your expenditure. Now, on the income side, I think we need to recognize that this generation is unfortunately facing an environment where growth is relatively more moderate than the previous generation. So like in the 90s, we have GDP growth up to 9%. But today, you know, GDP growth is much lower than that. And this kind of challenges actually, lead us to be in a situation or an economic structure where wages are relatively low. And we also have to contextualize this understanding where much of high income generating activities are also concentrated in Klang Valley, richer parts of the country. So for most of Malaysians, wage is still a relatively important issue that they don't have enough to spend to begin with. And on the other side of the equation is actually your consumption pattern. And we have to recognize that consumption pattern and expenditure behavior has changed over the years. And, you know, we see the greater importance of things like, having a good communication devices and good communication connection. And it does not necessarily reflect just changing preferences, but I think it also reflects the changing needs of modern life. And as well, you know, perhaps it's the changing needs of your work and the ability for you to access good jobs and good education.
Well, let's look at the income side, right? So apart from slower GDP growth rate in Malaysia, we also know that Malaysia has this curious situation of maybe not moving up the value chain fast enough and lower productivity. How long do you think we're going to be stuck in this problem? Because that would then determine how long we're going to be stuck in this sort of low wage, middle wage kind of trap.
Yeah, in terms of how long, I think that depends on how much willingness do we have to really change the structure of the economy. And on this end, I think conversations about industrial and development policy is very important. What has happened over the past decade is that we've shifted to a predominantly domestic-based services economic activity for the most part of the country. And of course, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong about being a services-based economy. But again, like I mentioned, you know, high value-added services economic activity tend to concentrate only on in certain parts of the country, but not in the rest of Malaysia. And I think, you know, thinking about how do we bring not just people in certain parts of the country, but, you know, everyone in the country to move up the value chain is a conversation that we really, really need to have.
Meanwhile, should we consider raising the minimum wage level to reflect the higher national poverty line income?
So, you know, in the defense of the government, they have increased minimum wages. But I think the next conversation would be to think about should it be pegged to inflation, for example, so that it reflects better how well people are doing. But on that front as well, I think it's not just about the minimum standards, but also what is the standard in general, right? And this goes a little bit more to the concept of whether people are being paid decent enough wages so that they can lead a meaningful life. So if you look at employee wages, for example, you know, half of Malaysians earn less than 2,400. And then you square that with other estimates by Negara Malaysia, for example, that look at different costs of living for different types of families in Kuala Lumpur. And when you compare just for an individual single person who lives in Kuala Lumpur, they should at least earn 2,700 ringgit to be able to lead, you know, a decent life. Squaring that with how low our wages are, it is clearly unaffordable if you get that wages and you live in KL. So I think minimum wage is one part of the story, but the other part of the story is also, you know, how are we setting wages in general? And that is tied back to the performance of our businesses and the economy in general.
Now, I'd like to just change a little bit, pivot a little bit to the situation that's happened over the last 12 months, right? So, Siti, maybe you can give us a bit of context about how the pandemic has exacerbated the generational wealth and income gap.
Yeah, sure. I think the biggest shock to one's income is actually unemployment. And that was a clear story that happened during the pandemic. And we have to remember, even before the pandemic, younger individuals are the ones who are more likely to be unemployed. During the pandemic, that did not change. It's just that more older people are also becoming unemployed because of the pandemic. So that's one angle of it. I think the other angle that we tend to miss out is also the incidence of underemployment. So if you think, if you know, if you are paid by the hour, for example, if you work less hour, you are paid less. And on this front, actually, younger people are quite severely affected. So when businesses had to cut hours and had to, you know, not just let go, maybe, you know, reduce the working hours for some people, it's the young ones that are usually asked to reduce their working hours. During the early, the first half of 2020, when MCO was implemented, actually everybody or the extent of underemployment was high across all age groups. But in the later half of 2020, where we see some kind of recovery, it was only the older workers who were reabsorbed into full employment, whereas younger workers, about 6% of the employed between the ages 15 to 24, remains to be underemployed. Whereas, you know, people who are older than 35 years old, less than 2% of them are unemployed. So this is yet another kind of shock, not as drastic as unemployment. But the reduced income from reduced working hours, I also suspect, might exacerbate the extent of inequality and generational wealth gap in the long run, income gap in the long run.
So on the one hand, the finance minister is calling for people and youth especially to save more. But on the other hand, the government's also allowing withdrawals from EPF during the pandemic. So is this mixed messaging? What do you make of these statements coming from the government?
I think, you know, one has to kind of pick and choose what resonates with you know, your situation. In the case of allowing EPF withdrawals, particularly, I think we have to recognize that, you know, what it does is it gives people agency and an option to, if you want to take out your retirement savings and if you need to put it in your emergency savings, for example. But of course, I think that the big issue is if you don't have enough retirement savings to begin with and you had to use that money to sustain life and you can't save. I think it's a more productive conversation than to kind of strategize when we are going through the recovery period, hopefully with, you know, successful vaccination and everything. How do we address people who now have depleted their retirement savings? And I think that's, you know, mixed messaging or not, I think that's it's a much more important conversation that we need to have.
Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Siti. That was Siti Aisyah Tumin, Research Associate at the Khazanah Research Institute, talking to us about some of these structural issues that are perhaps preventing more millennials from saving money at this time. We've also been running a poll on this subject, asking you, what do you think is the main challenge here? What are some of the results looking like?
Well, 46% agree it's low wages, 37% say it's high cost of living, 15% point towards poor financial planning, and 2% say others, or or they're not sure. And some comments I do want to point out here include, it goes many ways. Our income is considered low compared to prices of the things we need to pay. Furthermore, they need to also have entertainment spending. More creates more opportunity for businesses, but to the expense of other things like house and savings. Because think about it, we're always talking about stimulus and stimulating the economy. That equals expenditure, right? And this was a comment from Jay Sandin. But a particular comment that I liked here was from Nicholas. Now, a great way is to compare the food, transport, and accommodation to wage ratio between the older and current generations. During my parents' time, yes, they made less money, but the average housing loan was only 20 years and car loan was only 3 to 5 years. And this, I think, is a common occurrence. This is a great way to measure, I think, the real gap, right? I think most young people will will feel this. But, you know, referring to the other point in terms of prices of goods, it's a great one of the things I pay attention to is the relative cost of something, right? So let's say an iPhone, for example, costs $700 to $800 in the States or in the Western world. That is maybe 700 to 600 cans of Coca-Cola. Well, says the 3,000 ringgit here, that's like 2,000 cans of Coca-Cola for the same product, right? It's relative to the price of other goods on the ground. But, you know, that wage issue is going to be, it is a systemic thing that requires multiple angles of tackling.
Yeah, I mean, just the big picture here, right? Malaysia is an oil-rich country. It has palm oil too. You know, we have so many things going on for us, right, in our economy. Yet we are in this stage, we are still in the middle income economy and maybe one day lower middle income at the rates we are going. And we're dealing with a generation who's probably the most educated in terms of having access to universities. Mm. Last time, if you couldn't afford to go overseas, then you're really stuck with just maybe two or three choices. But now you have so many choices, more so highly educated, but can't get a job that matches their requirements. I think we just have to see, you know, how this economy is being run.
A lot of long-standing issues when it comes to why is it that millennials perhaps aren't able to save as much as previous generations. Do continue to let us know what you think. But right now, we're about to head into the 8 o'clock news bulletin, and then we'll be having the breakfast grill, where Noel will be speaking with Alan Law, CEO of the Park Hotel Group. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.